years ago. That's the Early Music Show in just a couple of minutes. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio, and you can also listen to us live online in high-definition sound. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news read by David Cornett.
Israeli airstrikes have destroyed the headquarters of the Hamas government in Gaza on the fourth day of its military offensive. Israel says it targeted 120 rocket launchers in the territory overnight, and it says approximately 40 rockets were fired from Gaza. At least 39 Palestinians and 3 Israelis have died since the violence intensified on Wednesday. Officials in Egypt say that at least 49 people were killed when a nursery school bus was hit by a train at a railway crossing. 47 of those who died were children. The provincial governor has blamed the railway worker in charge of the level crossing, saying he was asleep and failed to close the gates. The French president, François Hollande, has said Syria's newly formed opposition, National Coalition, will appoint an ambassador to France. France is the only Western country to have formally recognised the group as the representative of the Syrian people. The electrical retailer Comet has confirmed plans to close 41 shops by the end of November unless a buyer for the business can be found. The company has 236 outlets across Britain. It says administrators will try to find jobs for staff in its other shops, but redundancies are inevitable. One of the country's most senior police officers, Sir Hugh Orde, has said he does not believe that the low turnout in elections for police and crime commissioners in England and Wales has weakened their authority. He said there were challenges ahead for the commissioners as they seek to represent every part of their communities. The Hindu nationalist politician Bal Thackeray, who founded the party Shiv Sena, has died of heart failure at his home in Mumbai. He was 86. Bal Thackeray was blamed for fanning religious tensions during the 1993 riots in Mumbai through his writings against the Muslim community, but charges were dropped. Security has been stepped up in Mumbai in the wake of his death. And the weather, after a dull start, much of Britain will become brighter and colder. There'll be scattered showers in western Scotland, which could spread east through the afternoon. BBC News and weather at 1:02.
And it was read by David Cornett. It's time now on Radio 3 to join Catherine Bott for the Early Music Show.
Thank you. When the bright beam of Phoebus has not yet arisen, a watchman shouts to slumberers, "Arise!" An alba, or dawn song, from the 10th century. The singer, accompanying himself on the lyre, is that most compelling musician and scholar of really early music, Benjamin Bagby. Ben was passing through London recently, and we got together in a studio for an absorbing conversation. We've known each other for many years, and despite never working together, we have a lot of people and songs in common. Although medieval music turned out to be only a part of my performing career, it was so refreshing to spend some time with Ben, for whom it's a life's work. I began by asking him what had originally sparked his interest.
I can actually point to one concert I attended when I was 16 years old, which utterly blew my mind. I wasn't prepared for it. I had no idea what I was going to hear. I simply followed some students to a concert because it was free. What I saw and what I heard was absolutely new to me, and I was mystified and delighted and absolutely thrilled with the sounds I heard, and I immediately needed to know all about it. So I accosted the director of the ensemble and asked him what books I should read and where I could find out more about this music. And he sent me on a path that I'm still on.
And you were 16, so obviously university, college was looming for a bright boy like
yes.
you. Did you consciously decide to direct your academic studies towards musicology?
I might have done these days, but back in those days, that simply wasn't possible. There weren't the options that we have today for studying earlier music. So I was a bit limited by that. I ended up going to a perfectly normal conservatory, which over the years that I was there began an early music program. So it was sort of just coming into focus in the U.S. At a time when I was studying. And at that time, growing up in the States, we had this feeling that everything was happening in Europe. Everything. And if you didn't go to Europe, you couldn't access any sources, you couldn't access any performers who could teach you something. You had no access to instruments. And if you didn't have access to microfilms, you couldn't see manuscripts. So I was, of course, quite motivated to move to Europe and did so at the first opportunity.
Europe's a big place. Which bit did you come to?
Well, it started out rather big because when I finished conservatory, I received a very strange and unique kind of fellowship. And I had a project which was to travel all over Europe and also part of the Middle East to find out what we know today about the performance of medieval song. They gave me the fellowship, and so the only rule for this fellowship was that you could not enroll in any school and you had to keep traveling and keep a diary, keep a kind of journal as you traveled. So my first year was spent really on the road.
Gedeonis Area, a proclamation of the incarnation of Christ, which employs some rich imagery. Mary's body is as the unsullied floor of Gideon's threshing room. She is the burning bush, which shows God's radiance but is not consumed with sexual heat. The composer-poet of that conductus is known today as Philip the Chancellor, and we'll hear more about him later in the programme. That music comes from one of the earliest recordings made by the group that Ben Bagby started with Barbara Thornton in 1977, Sequentia. Here's how it came about.
That's a story tied to the city of Basel and the Schola Cantorum Basiliensis, which is a very well-known early music school. After my fellowship wandering year, I realized that the people who were doing the sorts of things I wanted to do were mostly in Basel. That included Andrea von Rahm, Thomas Winkley, and a lot of students, quite an international body of students who had come there also for the same reason. So I found a like-minded group of people with similar interests to mine. I ended up enrolling in this school in a diploma program at that time for medieval music, which was really one of the only performance programs in pre-Baroque music that you could find anywhere, and stayed there for 3.5 years. I met during that time many, many people who are still my dear friends and still colleagues. And of course, that's where I met Barbara Thornton, who had arrived there 1 year before me. And she was just as focused as I was, and we had a lot in common. And we were the two singers who finished the diploma program at the same time. And our final concert there just morphed into the first Sequentia concert. However, having finished our studies in Basel, we were required to leave Switzerland. And we ended up literally choosing the city of Cologne for a variety of reasons, but they were all chosen with the idea of making a flourishing ensemble in mind. We had a little bit of money saved, but not much. And the first 3 years there were really quite difficult. But we found an incredibly cheap loft to live in. A friend of mine is still living in that loft. The rent hasn't changed since then. It's still falling apart. And we began working with a colleague who lived in Maastricht, which is just across the border. Another colleague was a student in Cologne. And another colleague showed up from America at some point, and another one from Berlin, and it just snowballed. And I'd say after the fourth year, things began happening, and we began really being able to live from giving concerts.
Ben Bagby taking me back a few years as he recalled the early days of his group Sequentia. We've already heard the clarity and eloquence of Ben's singing, and now it's time to hear the voice of Sequentia's co-founder, Barbara Thornton, in a piece by St. Hildegard of Bingen, as we can now call her. O vis eternitatis, power of eternity, your very word calls forth flesh in the shape drawn from Adam.
Thank you.
Barbara Thornton with women's vocal ensemble and simple drone accompaniment from Sequentia in that hymn by Hildegard of Bingen. Here's Ben Bagby again.
Well, this is from the Hildegard project, which was a project spanning, well, now it's almost spanning 30 years, and started off with the music drama Ordo Virtutum. And the idea became, over the years, to record the complete works of Hildegard. And she's written more than 75 songs. We call them songs, they're canticles, or however you want to say it. We're almost there. There are 10 pieces remaining to be recorded for the complete works to be done. It was a kind of a leitmotif that went through the whole career of the ensemble. The idea of singing Hildegard. There was a women's ensemble, of course, for the first, 15 years or so. Then, for one of the recordings, it became clear that men's ensemble could also sing Hildegard because she was writing pieces for other cloisters, and a cloister of men near the city of Trier in Germany had actually requested some songs for their patron saint, and she provided them with these pieces. So they were designed to be sung by men as well. I think that brought in a new dimension also to Hildegard's music, to hear it in the voices of male singers.
O Bonifaci, you are a friend of the living God, and a lucent crystal in the graciousness of the paths of right, on which, sage-like, you ran. The male voices of Sequentia paying homage to St. Boniface in words and music by Hildegard of Bingen. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott. Hildegard isn't the subject of today's programme. She had one to herself not so long ago. But her 21st century reputation owes a great deal to the pioneering work of Sequentia, this year celebrating their 35th anniversary. Sequentia's Ben Bagby joined me recently in a BBC studio. As Ben and I talked, we shared many happy memories of Sequentia's co-founder, Barbara Thornton. Early Music lost a very telling voice and charismatic performer when she died in 1998. Apart from the personal sadness at her loss, what was the effect on the group's musical activities?
Well, when Barbara first was sick, we were just beginning to work on some projects involving the Icelandic Edda, which is a collection of all those Norse poems that tell us about the gods and the myths of the Norsemen. And it's something that's always fascinated me since I was a kid. And it was a new direction for the ensemble. And we had just made a new project and were finishing it when she fell ill. And then during the period when she was ill, which was almost 2 years, we had to fill in, we had to kind of regroup and make some other kind of program. So there was an interlude there of music that didn't involve her at all, because she was recuperating from the first operation. And after her death, there was, of course, a long period of nothing at all. And then slowly, things began to come back into focus. And I found that my interest was more and more going towards repertoires which are in the gray zone between notation and oral tradition. And it's always been a weakness of mine, you know, wherever the notation is missing, that's really where I want to be. I found that I began to follow that path more and more. I really began to go more into this direction of what's going on in Iceland, what's going on in Anglo-Saxon England, what's going on in Germany, northern lands mostly, where the written traces of stories and poems are mostly verbal, and if they contain notation, it's quite difficult to decipher. And that's a new direction that the ensemble was just kind of touching on in the 90s, and after Barbara's death, things really veered more in that direction. I gave that whole big zone of operation the title The Lost Songs Project, so that's an area where I've been now pretty active for the last 15 years or so.
Ben Bagby, here are two songs from Sequentia's Lost Songs of a Rhineland Harper, and medieval censors tried their best to make sure they were lost forever. Fortunately for us, they failed. First, Suavissima Nunna, an amorous dialogue between a seducer and a nun, conducted in a mixture of Latin and German, and then Veni Delectissima, probably the oldest surviving erotic dance song in Latin.
Suavissima Nunna, affet vulve mir mit vulna.
Music from the early years of the 11th century celebrating those timeless themes, love and sex. The performers, and to an extent reconstructors, were Sequentia. And we heard a lot from flute and harp in those songs. I asked Ben Bagby for his thoughts on the role of instruments in very early music.
I don't think there's any fixed answer to that question. I think that we like to have clear relationships between voices and instruments. We like the idea that there's a performance practice that belongs to every period and that we can respect it, and then we're being historically informed. But I think that when we're talking about a period such as the 12th century, where we have so little information, much of it contradictory, we don't have anecdotes that describe, well, when they performed this piece, they had the following instruments tuned in the following way, and we don't have that kind of information. But we do know that instruments were used some of the time. It tends to follow certain kinds of vocal genre. There are types of vocal music that are more linked to instruments than others. We certainly have all benefited from the work of Chris Page in talking about that and bringing our attention to the fact that genre is a really important focal point for making decisions about instrumental participation. But again, from Germany to France to Spain to Italy to England, it's almost impossible to make generalizations. I think that in any given repertoire, you have to just look at the people who were making that music, where they were, what their aesthetic sense was, what kind of access they had to worldly instruments. For instance, there were abbots who had personal harpers, keeping them entertained. So there were instruments in a monastic context, we simply don't know the extent of their use.
Music from Sequentia's CD Fragments for the End of Time now. An evocation of the apocalypse, Fortis Atque Amara. Full of might and bitterness shall be the day on which all things must perish. My conversation with Ben Bagby really underlined not only the depth and breadth of medieval music, but also the vitality of the poetic language, whether it's about Icelandic family strife or devotions to the Virgin Mary. Ben again, talking about another Sequentia project, Visions from the Book.
That's a programme that wanted very much to focus on the stories from the Bible that captivated medieval listeners. These are not necessarily gospel stories, but all kinds of Old Testament stories. Of course, who doesn't like to hear about Noah and the flood, the stories of David and Jonathan, all those Old Testament kings, the story of Job. These are all part of our cultural baggage, just as much as the icky Icelandic stuff is. And it's all in the end storytelling. And medieval poets were brilliant at retelling these stories. They didn't necessarily take the biblical text and set it to music, but they let themselves be inspired by what was in the Bible, which of course they were reading in Latin, and letting that inspire their poetic instincts to retell the story in measured verse, which is a big sensation. That's something quite new, that you'll have Latin poetry which is measured. Because the Bible is in prose, it's not at all measured. And so we have retellings which sometimes embellish the story, sometimes are very true to it, with music designed to be sung, usually in a choir school, a cathedral school, or in a monastic community, as a sort of ennobling entertainment. In other words, they don't fit in the liturgy. They're not really part of the daily song, the chant singing and all that, but they're somehow for recreation, for remembering a certain story on a certain feast day. And those most famous pieces were written down.
And from that recording, here's an account of the destruction of the house of Job by a savage wind. Similarly, man's soul is under siege by Satan and needs four strong corners to withstand him: prudence, fortitude, justice, and temperance. A Deserto Veniens, an anonymous 13th century conductus from Notre Dame in Paris, performed by Sequentia. As Ben Bagby writes in the liner note to that Visions from the Book CD, Paris was the indisputable centre for new music around the year 1200. Which brings us back to the music and poetry of Philip the Chancellor, a philosopher who was renowned for his spiritual integrity and intellectual brilliance. He became Chancellor of the Cathedral of Notre Dame in the year 1217, championing the autonomy of his scholars and students, and he left more than 70 pieces of music, designed, says Ben Bagby, for an elite and educated audience. This is Luto Carens et Latere. Free of clay and brick, the Israelite crosses freely, cleansed by baptism's wave. Unashamedly demanding listening, created by one of the greatest of medieval minds, that of Philip the Chancellor. My time in the studio with Ben Bagby hurtled by. As you've gathered, he's as fluent and persuasive a champion of music and scholarship as Philip the Chancellor ever was. But he wears his learning lightly, and I knew he would smile when I asked my last, ever so slightly tongue-in-cheek question. If he had to submit to writing a very 21st century mission statement, I suspect it would begin with his belief that music has been going downhill ever since the 14th century. What else is Benjamin Bagby's work about?
Yes, and also celebrating oral tradition, because that was our music for hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of years. It was all based on oral tradition. And when music writing comes into play, there are other factors in what we choose to listen to. The technology of music writing changes the way we teach music. It changes the way we listen to music. It completely alters the landscape of musical transmission. And I'm interested in oral tradition, but we can't know what it was. Let's say, what do we know about 8th century oral tradition? Practically nothing. But in the zone where the oral tradition intersects with the first use of notation, there I get really, really interested, because that's where every little symbol you find on the parchment is telling you something about why did he write it like this and not some other way. There must have been a reason. And at that moment, we're getting a very faint signal from another culture that's trying to tell us something about the way they heard or experienced music and text.
in Convertendo Dominus, a Roman psalmody performed there by Benjamin Bagby, who was talking to Catherine Bott in the programme. You can find further details about all the music by visiting the Radio 3 website and just follow the links to the Early Music Show page. And you can also download the programme from there. In tomorrow's Early Music Show, Lucy Skeeping explores the art of the lullaby and its inspiration to early music. That's at the same time, just after 1 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3.
When you're a musician, inspiration can come from an unusual source.
I was staying for a week in a hotel in Sao Paulo, and they played in a loop the first and second piano concertos by Beethoven in the lift, and I thought it would make me crazy to have to listen to those pieces all the time.
Which floor were you on?
The opposite happened, that I just thought, how original, how fresh, how joyful, and it triggered something in me. And I thought, maybe now's the time. Mm. Maybe I should take Beethoven seriously. Mm.
Leif Ove Andsnes begins a 4-year journey through the music of Beethoven with two of his finest piano concertos. Radio 3, live in concert, Tuesday night at 8.
Well, back to this Saturday afternoon. If you've recently tuned in, a very good afternoon to you from me, Jonathan Swain. In a moment or two, a concert of Beethoven, Schumann and Grieg for cello and piano, including the Grieg Cello Sonata. And after it's Saturday Classics, the first of two programmes in which John Sessions presents a selection of music that's much loved today, but at the time received terrible reviews or had disastrous premieres. John recounts some of the more colourful reviews of works like Ravel's String Quartet, Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto, Puccini's Tosca and Debussy's Prelude à l'après-midi d'un faune. Saturday Classics is at 3 o'clock. And following on from it, Jazz Record Requests. Alan Shipton presenting a special London Jazz Festival edition in front of an audience at King's Place. As well as listeners presenting their own requests, there'll be favourite discs chosen by celebrity guests and musicians associated with the London Jazz Festival, and some live music. 5 o'clock for that. And it takes us to Opera on Three, some rare Rossini this week, a performance of his opera Matilda di Chobran from the 2012 Pesaro Festival. Opera on Three begins at 6 o'clock. So that's how the afternoon is laid out here on BBC Radio 3. And now with the time at 2 o'clock, another chance to hear last Monday's live Wigmore Hall concert. The presenter is Fiona Talkington.
The French cellist Gauthier Capuçon has earned a reputation for his live performances, his distinctive sound, his charisma, his ability to draw audiences into his music. And he's here at Wigmore Hall this lunchtime with the pianist Gabriella Montero in a programme which certainly combines lyricism and passion. Schumann's Fantasia Stücke Opus 73 and Grieg's Cello Sonata in A minor. And to begin with a set of variations by Beethoven on a duet from Mozart's opera The Magic Flute. By Männern, welche Liebe fühlen, those who feel love, which is sung in the opera by Papageno and Pimina. The tune was a real showstopper right from the start when the opera was first performed in 1791, and Beethoven, being a master of improvisation and variation, saw the potential in making a really sparkling set of variations, with both the piano and the cello revelling in the exchanges, as if they were playing out the roles of Mozart's original sweethearts, the piano as Pimina, the cello answering as Papageno, witty, light-hearted and dramatic. And applause now as Gauthier Capuçon and Gabriella Montero come onto the stage here at Wigmore Hall to begin their concert this lunchtime with Beethoven's 7 variations on Mozart's Bei Männern, welcher Liebe fühlen.